Hi, this is Rabbi Josh Yoder. Normally when I put up as a podcast a recorded class, I just simply upload and go. Today, I gave a class on taxes and tzedakah, part 5 in my economics and social justice series that I've been giving at for the NYU Jewish Law Students Association. And after turned off the recorder, we had a really great discussion. So it was worthwhile to bring it back and put it on again, simply because there were some points to consider that just plain forgot to include in the class, trying to condense it for time issues. So, if you're listening right now, wait until the very end. I do sign off. There's a little bit of a discussion that goes afterwards that I think is worthwhile, certainly worthwhile enough to put down recording. Anyway, thank you very much for downloading and listening, and I hope you enjoy.
Good afternoon, everyone. It is Monday, March 28, 2011. Today's topic in the Economics and Social Justice and Jewish Law series is taxes and tzedakah. I happen to love this one. It's a little bit different than what we've been doing in the previous weeks, in that there's a very simple question, which is, what is the relationship between taxes and tzedakah in Judaism, tzedakah being charity? The premise being that since some of your tax dollars do go to social needs, and we'll explain a little bit of what that means, or some social programs, and would that count, or I mean, one way of looking at it is, would it count for an obligation to give charity? And we'll see that in section one. I will also forewarn that we're not going to give a straight answer to this question, but rather I want to offer a couple of different perspectives on how to approach the question and what are going to be some of the ramifications. And the truth is, it's not going to be simple. Whether or not you say that taxes are similar to tzedakah or taxes are not similar to tzedakah. From a social perspective, some of you may be familiar with the book Who Really Cares the Truth About Compassionate Conservatism, where the author, Ronald Burns, I think was his name, tried saying how that the religious conservatives, or conservatives, tend to be more religious, tend to do a lot more charitable giving, whereas people who tended to be more democratic, more liberal, would not give as much charity, but would rather rely on, quote, the system. So there are people who would actually, you know, assuming you take his research seriously, it was actually based on data that I honestly have no time to double check, but just even if you assume the premise, you know, it's an interesting question from a halachic perspective. All right. So in section one here, I want to deal with what are some of the implications for this discussion about how we do wind up defining taxes and tzedakah, or based on some of the strategies, whether or not we sort of are able to merge taxes and tzedakah together. You want to take source number one, please? Bava Batra 9a.
Vasi said, a person should never give less than one-third of a shekel each year, or it is written, we assumed upon us the obligation to give a shekel each year towards.
All right, so this Gemara in Bava Batra 9a puts the minimum requirement for charity as one-third of a shekel, which is really not a whole lot. For those of us here who do pay anything in taxes, you're pretty much going to be covered by this, right? So you have a really significant implication there. However, you know, many people give a lot more than just, you know, a third of a shekel. They do what's called ma'aser. And this is a really fascinating piece here. David, please take the sources 2a and 2b. The pasuk is from Dvarim 14:22, so start with there.
Give a tithing from all the grains of your field every year.
Now, and the next is Tosafot in Ta'anit, Babylonian tractate, 9a.
Give of the tithing. This is what is written in the Sifri. Give of the tithing from all of the grains of your produce. This only says the grains of your field are obligated to be tithed. Interest, business dealings, and all other resources, from where do we know they too are obligated to tithing? From the words all. That we find to say that all comes to include your interest, business dealings, and all other forms of income.
This Tosafot, medieval commentators, it's actually school, is the source for what we call in Hebrew ma'aser kesafim, of giving one-tenth of your income, because the biblical verse just says you give one-tenth of your grain. What do you know about money? So the Tosafot here quote the Sifri, which is a rabbinic text, typically follows in such legal exegesis of when the Bible says X, Y, and Z, we also apply it to A, B, and C, and it will either have the force, depending on how you look at it, as biblical law, because it would be the rabbis interpreting the document as what does the Bible mean, or sometimes you'll have in the Sifrei recordings of rabbinic decrees, of rabbis saying this is what it means. So it either put Ma'aser Kisafim as either a biblical or a rabbinic obligation. One question here that you might pick up, which is, if it's the Sifri, why did I not just quote the Sifri? Why am I quoting the Tosafot quoting the Sifri? And the answer is, the Sifri doesn't exist. By doesn't exist, I mean, this little passage here, or this extension of applying tithing, taking Ma'aser from just the biblical commandment of grain to money, appears nowhere in rabbinic literature, based on my Bar Ilan searches at least, and it does not appear in the critical edition of the Sifri. Zero. And in fact, when Rabbi Yovadi Yosef discusses the question of are you obligated to give a tenth, his source for it is the Tosafot. Now, Rabbi Yovadi Yosef, one of the things he's really known for is knowing absolutely everything. Phenomenal memory of Jewish texts. And when he discusses it, his primary source for Ma'aser Kisafim, for giving a tenth of income, financial, is this Tosafot. At the end of the day, both Rabbi Yovadi Yosef and Rabbi Moshe Feinstein call giving one-tenth of your income custom. Call it a minhag as opposed to an actual law. There are other people who do say it's obligatory, but given that you don't have an explicit source that we have today, not going to say that the Baalei Tosafot made it up, right? Could very well be they had another text of it, but the burden, if you want to say that you have to follow the rabbinic tradition, the burden is on you to provide the source. And given that we have no source in existence for it, I think there was another medieval commentator who said it was in a Tanhum, another midrashic source, but it ain't there either. I consider this on one hand, for people who say that you have an obligation to give one-tenth of your income, I consider that on one hand a myth, but it's a pretty good myth as things consider. Like, if you're going to make something up, like, okay, fine, you wind up giving more, charity, which, grand scheme of things, you could make up a whole lot of worse stuff. But the point is, it's hard for me to say that you have an obligation to give one-tenth of your income. So if you're talking, and people incidentally discuss, if you do give one-tenth, do you do it based on your net or gross? Meaning, do you calculate it before or after taxes? Which has its own implications. I believe Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, in a response, said you calculate it on the after taxes, because the money that you owe for taxes isn't really yours. Some people who have real jobs actually have taxes deducted, from their paycheck automatically, right? So it's as if you never really had that money to begin with, which itself has implications for our question of the relationships in taxes and tzedakah. But at least for section one, from these two sources here, it seems that the minimum that we are obligated to give charity according to Jewish law is so low that if you do think taxes could be considered charity, you fulfilled your obligation. Not a problem with that. And if you calculate it based on whether or not you give a tenth, even though that's a matter of custom, how you do the math could also be could be impacted.
What kind of interest is it talking about?
In terms of like charging interest, getting money off of interest. Interesting question there. No pun intended there, because technically you're not supposed to charge interest. So one would assume it would be interest, either related to non-Jews in some sort of way. But it is a great point, to mention there. It would not include interest gotten from Jews. But, well, I don't know, because, you're not supposed to have, gotten money from that. It's like saying, well, I just embezzled $3 million from my company. How much charity do I need to give from that? It's an odd question, which I have no doubt a rabbi at some point has gotten, and someone has asked without a shred of irony. Yeah.
Have any other expenses tried to be deducted from, the most paid before paying tzedakah, like education loans or something like that, where it also something. Yours,
because you owe money off of that.
Right.
Interesting point with that, too, of how else you calculate it, that if you already owe money to someone else and that there's an outside creditor and it's not really yours, great point as well. I don't recall that being mentioned. I should say I haven't seen it discussed. That doesn't mean it isn't discussed. It just means I haven't done enough research to even say I haven't found it yet. So, but it is a great point in terms of how you would do that math. In section B, another interesting halakha would be the maximum amount of charity that you're allowed to give. Please take source number 3. This is a Gemara Ketubot 30a, which I think we saw last time too. Yeah.
Rabbi Yehuda stated, it was ordained at Yisra that if a man wishes to spend liberally, he should not spend more than a fifth. So it was also taught, if a man desires to spend liberally, he should not spend a fifth, since by spending more, he might come to be in need of the help of people. It once happened that a man wished to spend more than a fifth, but his friend was not alone. Who was it? Rabbi Yehuda. Others say that the man who wished to spend was Rabbi Yehuda, but his friend did not allow him.
Mm-hmm. I could just skip to, like, yeah, and feed an LM. So you could even skip to the end of this section here in terms of, like, what the proof text is. But according to the main point of this piece is that the maximum amount you are, it seems to be allowed to give charity, is one-fifth. Which means that if you're going to calculate how much charity you should give, you know, then it would seem if you count your taxes, or at least somehow you can break down your taxes as some sort of charitable giving, then that ought to be included because you could wind up giving a lot more than you ought to be able to. However, there are different ways of reading this particular passage in the Gemara from Ketubot 50a, which is, do you treat this as actual law, such that if you gave more than one-fifth, that you've broken Jewish law, or is this more of a suggestion? The example I think we gave last week was, you know, someone like Bill Gates. He can give 95% of his wealth away, or Warren Buffett. You know, give 95% of your wealth away and still live pretty comfortably, or at least, you know, by my standards. You know, so how would that apply? Take source number 4. This is Rav Moshe Feinstein, Yeridea 1143.
And with what was shown active not to give more than one-fifth to charity? Whether it is a prohibition or rather good advice, it seems from the text of the Talmud that it is a prohibition.
Right. So, you know, there are, and we'll see, like, the next source from the Shulchan Aruch, that it's not always treated as a prohibition, but if you take the Gemara at face value, it does seem to be that it is prohibited. Even if you could afford it, it seems that you would be prohibited from giving more than a fifth. His conclusion?
So practically speaking, do not give more than one fifth if there's no life for
it. Right. So Rav Moshe Feinstein's position practically is, since, you know, how you read the Gemara isn't so clear, that you do have some opinions that say you're allowed to give more if you can afford it, but the language of the Gemara seems to be it's an actual prohibition. So he says, don't give more, like, just keep that as your limit if there is no life-threatening need. Meaning, if there's a matter of pikuach nefesh, when you're allowed to suspend Jewish law anyway, then sure, ahead, you know, give more money. Shulchan Aruch Yeridea 2491, I know we're out of order chronologically here, says the amount for giving charity is, if one can afford, he should give what the poor needs. If he cannot afford, he should give up to one-fifth of his possession as an ideal amount. One-tenth is considered a middle approach. Less than one-tenth, that is a, quote, bad eye, an ayin ra'ah. And this one-fifth means one-fifth from the total net worth 1 year and one-fifth from all subsequent income. The Ramah adds, one does not go an important qualification here that we're going to see a little bit later, is that one does not give from his ma'aser for any other commandments, such as candles to the synagogue or other commandments. Rather, it should only be given for poor people, meaning any money that's designated for ma'aser has to be specifically for poor people and not to fulfill any other obligation. We're going to revisit that point a little bit later, too. The language, though, you know, again, we according to Shulchan Aruch, is, you know, give whatever you can, but if you can't afford, you should give up to one-fifth. The implication being, if you can afford to give more than a fifth, go ahead. Right? So, there are different ways of reading that Gemara. One way could be how you do the certain bit of calculating of reaching your maximum, though, according to other opinions, even if you do exceed your maximum, it's not going to be the biggest of deals, but it is an important point to consider. In part two, I want to deal with some of the crunching numbers. I know it's a bit... Yeah.
I'm just wondering, looking back at the Ketuvot, Rabbi Eli, it doesn't say about charity, it just says if you want to spend liberally, don't spend more than a fifth.
The context wasn't charity, this was money that he gave away in his deathbed. you know, in terms of like how much, and that's like how it's, yeah.
Of selling to want to buy a house.
No, it's also, it's a principle that's applied to fulfilling positive commandments, where you don't spend more than 20%, for example, on an etrog. Right, you know, you're supposed to get a pre-Eitz Hadar. You're supposed to get a nice-looking fruit. What's considered nice, or how much should you spend on something nice? Someone said, you know, 20% is like the most you're supposed to spend on something, and that's, you know, sort of a mathematical rule of thumb. Right? It doesn't mean whatever you spend on, you should spend up to 20%, because, you know, after a while, you're still going to be broke. But specifically, it's fulfilling this obligation of charity, which is the context of the Gemara.
Because there could be a conflict, like with the Ramah and the last one. Mm-hmm. Let's say the synagogue had a lot of needs that year, and then
right.
then there's a lot of poor people.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I already gave a fifth of my thing.
Yeah, well, right. So we're going to address that in terms of obligations, needs, and where does the money actually go? Yeah.
Did they have like conflicts with billionaires back then? I mean, like nowadays, if it's really, like you said, 95% of his money.
We do know people that were incredibly affluent. In terms of billionaire, not so much, but we do have stories of people who spent obscene amounts of money on things, assuming you take it at face value. There was Gemara about someone spent several years' salaries worth on an etrog or something like that. No, was it? No, I'm trying to blank on the number. There were a bunch of rabbis who were on a boat. I think they spent at least Matayim Zuz on an etrog, where Matayim Zuz was like the normal wages. Just on like one etrog and pass it around. So there were definitely people who were well off in terms of the amount of income that we would have today of billionaires. Probably not to that extent, but if you're talking about relative, you did have people who, if they, even if they gave away half of their wealth, could still live okay, or at least one would think.
You could still live obscenely rich even if you gave away like.
I don't know if they had it to that extent back then. I mean, the income disparity, I'm not sure, was as great as you have today. If, I don't think it was as much. I mean, I could be wrong about that. I mean, assuming you're not monarchy, you know, in which case all bets are off quite literally. Anyway, well, not quite literally because you're not really betting. I really hate using the term literally. Anyway, math section here. So I got these pictures that I see from the Center of Budget and Policy Priorities from the 2007 U.S. federal budget. Just to give some idea of, you know, well, how much, you know, if you want to try to say, well, taxes going to charity, you know, look at, you know, the pie chart here. You know, things could have changed. You've got 21% for defense and security. Okay, that might not necessarily be charitable. Social Security then takes the next one. Do you consider Social Security to be something charitable? Well, maybe, maybe not, because Social Security is not something that's given to people necessarily because they are poor. Their money's distributed to people who have reached a certain age. One of the critiques that Milton Friedman had on Social Security, that it is a social program that's based not on need, but rather based on how old you are. And yes, it's not that you're putting away money for social, for it's, we don't have this lockbox accounting thing. The way that you pay Social Security is the money that you are spending on Social Security taxes now directly is going out to people today, which is why people have made the analogy to a Ponzi scheme. Whether or not it actually fits that definition, I don't know, but you're paying, you're using the new money to pay for the old money. That was, you know, owed. So maybe, maybe not, depending on the individual. Medicare, Medicaid, and SCHIP, I think we can say could be considered charitable because those are actually paying for medical needs. Certainly, Medicaid, which is specifically for poor people, as opposed to Medicare, which are just for senior citizens, but certainly Medicaid, we could consider charitable because you're paying for people's, you know, medical services. Let's see now. Everything else, you have education. Well, maybe, maybe not. I mean, assuming that your education dollars are spent correctly, you're training people to become self-supported, which is we saw last week is the highest level of charity according to Rambam. Scientific and medical research, that's a little bit pushing it for, you know, saving people's lives. We have 9% of various safety net programs here. Interest on the debt would be a whole lot harder to say that that's something charitable. But at any rate, you know, the point of me including this here is that certainly for meeting that one-third shekel criteria, just from your federal taxes alone, you probably have met it somehow, given just, excuse me, the percentage of distribution. I include it here on pages, yeah.
So So then, but is it fair then to include what you pay in taxes in the amount of the shekel?
Is it fair?
Shekel,
what do you mean?
Right, because we're not including it in our income, in our gross income. So that's to say, but it is included when we calculate the charity requirement.
We're going to get that to the second half. We're going to address that in a way. In the next two pages, when I give this class a little bit longer, I give some sort of distinction about, your income and how much tax, and even just taking Social Security and Medicare, percentages out of it, which the whole progressive tax system, that you probably have reached your ma'aser, giving a tenth through your taxes, and even giving it additional 10% wouldn't put you over the edge. But if you do count your taxes for charity, you would have to recalculate your maximum. If anyone wants to spend more time on the numbers, here, spend more time on the numbers. Another question that we'll deal with the last section is, would there be a difference of whether or not your money goes to Jews or non-Jews? We'll discuss that a little bit at the end, but for comparison purposes, on page 4 here with a B section here on if you lived in Israel, where would your taxes go? And in the budget, based on the footnotes that I have here in the PDS, 30.97% of their 2007 total budget went to, quote, social services, which would all be considered, something that would be charitable, based on health, welfare, education, housing, and benefits for Nazi victims. And even just focusing on, that 30.9%, you have a certain breakdown there. Both Israel and America work on a progressive tax rate, which means money that earned up until a certain level is taxed at a certain amount, and any money on a higher level is taxed on a higher amount.
This is just the federal.
Yeah, this is just federal, because there is no way I'm going to break down for 50 states. That's not going to happen. But, the truth is, even if you're just talking about it federally, your money's going to go to taxes. And don't forget, when you do pay taxes, even if you want to take away the income tax side, you also pay the Social Security and health care tax are separate. I know this quite well because as a rabbi, I'm technically not an employee of the synagogue. I'm actually self-employed, which means I pay double that, Social Security and the Social Security and double the Medicare tax. So you can even just take those aside separately and say, well, even though they're all part of the federal budget, we pay for them differently. We do that off the top, meaning even if you have tax deductions, those percentages, what were the numbers that I had based on that year? It was 6.2%, 6.2% for Social Security, 1.5% for Medicare. These were based on 2000 numbers. It's 2007 numbers. It's probably gone up since then. So that money, though, is specifically designated for something charitable. Works a little bit differently in Israel. There's another interesting distinction with Israel from the Mishpatei Uziel. This was responsive by Rabbi Ben Zion Uziel, first party chief rabbi of Israel, who says here, you want to take source number 6 on page 4?
From here we answer the question that it is permissible to combine designated Meister money with other money he had in his hand to give from both of them to the Jewish National Fund. Since from what he gives from the undesignated money goes toward his obligation to donate to the redemption of the state, and what he combines from Meister is an unrequired addition to that obligation.
So according to the Mishpatei Uziel, at least, he's dealing with the question of, can you give Ma'aser money? If you've got money that was designated for charity, can you give that to something like the JNF? He says partially. He says that one is that there is an intrinsic obligation that we have to give, to support the land of Israel. So take off a little bit of that, and that goes to support your obligation. Anything else on top of that, once you've fulfilled your base obligation, that can count for charity. Because he's saying explicitly that supporting the land of Israel is itself something charitable. In its own right. So, we have as Jews a more of a religious connection with the land of Israel than we would with America. It's a great country here, but, Israel is a core component of the Jewish religion. So according to Rav Ben Zion Uziel, even just giving to the JNF and supporting the state of Israel could count for charity, which means if you want to talk about breaking down, certain elements of the budget,
You know, in America, you say, well, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security might count as charity. When you're talking about Israel, right, anything that you can say in theory goes to the support of the land of Israel could be considered as something that's charity worthy or okay. worthy of. Yeah.
Why does it say the JMF and not like the taxes?
We'll actually get to them a little bit later with the taxes.
Okay.
Yeah, because certain implications here. So part three and four, I want to do very explicitly two different perspectives here. Now that we have some idea of the math, some idea of the ramifications, I want to give two different sides here. One, how would you say taxes are not charity? Meaning, what are the grounds for saying they're completely distinct? And in the next section, section afterwards, we'll say, well, how could we view them such that they would be? Not going to take a firm position on here, but we're going to look at it from two different sides. David, Shulchan Aruch, Yeridea 2596.
Sure. A community cannot pay taxes for money designated as charity.
Doesn't get much more explicit than this. Shulchan Aruch says very explicitly that if you have money that's designated as charity, you can't pay your taxes from it. If taxes were equivalent to charity, then there shouldn't be a problem because you're not, you know, switching around funds, right?
What are the taxes going to?
We'll get that in the next section. Great question, but at least as he's putting it here, there's a difference between, you know, taxes and charity. Take source number 8. This is Divrei Moshe Yerideya 19. This is Rabbi Moshe Ezra Mizrahi from Aleppo, lived from 1863 to 1955.
It is obvious that this is the law regarding supporting an adult orphan, that one may not use monster money. For were that the case, even though he does an act of charity to be paying taxes for, since he has an obligation from the king, it seems to me that he cannot pay his taxes for monster money. And it seems to me that it does not make sense to say that he had the intention from the beginning to give from Maaser, for there he brought the obligation on himself. He would need to say so.
Right. So here we have something, you know, an opinion that states very similar to what we said earlier. Since the requirement is coming from an outside source, you're not just giving it on your own, then you really can't take the two seriously. Even within Jewish law for such matters, we just had Purim. One of the requirements you have for Purim is matanot le'evyonim, gifts to the poor, which on one end we can say, oh, you know, that's giving charity. But the law there too is, if you have money that's designated for charity, you can't use that money for matanot le'evyonim. It's a separate, distinct requirement that Rabbi Moshe Ezra Mizrahi from Aleppo is, you know, making that very explicitly. And here is a fantastic piece, also very straightforward, from Rav Moshe Feinstein in Yerideya 1143, take number 9.
Furthermore, we never find that the law is that since the government takes money, you are exempt from charity.
Alright, so we have a couple of sources here that seem to be very explicit that whatever money you give to taxes, completely distinguished from charity, can't get away with it. Right? And keep in mind in the back of your head, Rav Moshe Feinstein's language of, we've never seen it. Like, no one's ever suggested that you could fulfill your obligation from giving taxes. And the reason why that's important is we're going to see it in the other way. So, yeah, any questions on this part so far?
Do you think this is why that there's no halacha to give maaser? Because if you're obligated, then it wouldn't really be charity?
Well, no, because you do have an obligation to give a certain amount of money. I mean, you have a mitzvah to say give maaser ani. Right, you know, a certain tithing to the poor every couple of years, you know, in addition to like the regular aser to aser from your grain, you still have to do that, right? You know, whether or not you consider that tzedakah when you're giving your obligation, I'm not so sure, because you saw, like, it's not beyond the reach of halacha to say, in theory, you have to give 10% of your income, no matter how you got your income, 10% of your net income, be it in money, be it in grain, be it in, I don't know, some other commodity, pork bellies or whatever you're trading in. You know, one-tenth of it. They could just as easily have said that, in which case you have to do it. We would call it charity, and you're fulfilling an obligation for charity, but yeah, you know, nothing wrong with that. But here, you know, at least based on the Divrei Moshe, the government is the one who's giving you this issuance. It's not Jewish law that you're fulfilling, it's the king. Right? So we have three sources here that seem to explicitly state a distinction between taxes and tzedakah. Right? Now, we're not going to stop here because otherwise it would have been a really short class. And part four, it's, well, how could it we consider taxes to be charity? So first, source number 10 here on page 5 in our sheets, Rambam Laws of Charity 9.1. Every city in which Jews live must establish a charity agent, men who are known and trusted to go to the people from week to week and to take from everyone what they find to give, and what they allocate, they distribute money to the poor for the subsequent week. So according to, please take source number 11 here, Rashba 126 in his responsa. This is Rabbi Shlomo Ben Adert, lived in Barcelona, 1235 to 1311.
And you have also asked if a court can obligate the community to give charity as a mandated tax or as a voluntary contribution. The answer for this is that not all places get it. Rather, some places practice voluntary contributions, others fix a tax. But the letter of the law is that a person should see himself as obligated to give what he can to whomever he can. So we are all obligated to support the poor based on what we have to give. And there are many disputes about this.
Right, so the first way, where even today we could theoretically view taxes as charity, is simply this. We live now in a democracy, right? Maybe you could say the law would be different under the monarchy, because the Divrei Moshe is specifically talking about a king. We live as a democracy. We could, in theory, view our government as agents to redistribute collective wealth. And, you know, there are people who actually do advocate that the point of government is to redistribute wealth for income equality or some variance thereof. So instead of viewing it as taxes, it's we are appointing certain leaders of the community to forcibly take money from us and to give it to poor people. Right? So you can view the government in theory, as the language of the Rambam, as a gabai tzedakah, as that's part of what their role is and what their job is. So you're not saying that it's a matter of a governmental issue as much as we have an obligation of communal responsibility. And according to the Rashba, there are times when it could be enacted, in his words, as a mas, which is the word for taxes. Right? So you could set up as a community, this is going to be a body that's going to determine how to redistribute wealth, and we're going to give them the power to forcibly collect money from us. For certain people, this is exactly what government is. Some will use this analogy derisively to say, you know, income redistribution is bad, and some could say it's a good thing, but it certainly is a perspective that we can have as to what is it that our government does. In which case, we don't see them as they're just passing laws that we have to do, but rather we are setting them up as agents to redistribute our wealth on our behalf. And we can view them as gabai tzedakah. Right, so that's section, you know, one possible way of looking at the government. Another really fascinating quirk that we have, in terms of where we would be actually, I mean, that's could be an optional way of looking at the government. If you don't say that taxes are considered like charity, you wind up backing yourself into another corner, regarding rabbinic exemptions for the obligations of taxes, which we see here on page 6. David, take source number 12 here. Just read the underlying portions. This is Gemara in Bava Batra 8a.
Rabbi Nachman ben Rabbi Chisda levied a poll tax on the rabbis. Said Rabbi Nachman ben Isaac to him, "You have transgressed against the law, the prophets, and the holy writings."
And then it goes through exactly how did you violate them. Continue with the next underlying section.
Rab Judah said, "All must contribute to the building of doors and the town gates, even orphans. Not, however, the rabbis, since they do not require protection."
So for matters of communal infrastructure, rabbis are exempt. Yay! Take source number 13. This is Rambam, Laws of Talmud Torah, 6:10.
Sages do not go out on their own to work with the rest of the community to build or to dig state projects, so that they do not debase themselves in front of the general populace. And we do not collect from them to build walls or to fix gates, or to pay watchmen, or to give a gift to the king, and we do not obligate them to pay taxes, be it for communal or individual taxes.
Yeah. Sorry, I cut off the Hebrew here. I'll have to add that when I post these online. Yeah. Isn't that amazing? So, sweet! You get another perk. Rabbis are exempt from taxes. You should all know here, full disclosure, I do pay taxes on a regular basis. I'm a very nice accountant. Just need to put that on the record here. Now,
Social Security
quest. I do. There you go. You see? Pay double on that, which, believe me, I'm not thrilled with. Although I should point out here that according to the tax law, there is a you could, in theory, get an exemption if you're a religious organization. If somehow giving Social Security offends your religious beliefs, you can kind of argue against that. The downside is you won't collect Social Security, which I don't consider to be a downside, because by the time I retire, God knows what state it's going to be in if it still exists. I've been told that the Rabbinic Assembly of Conservative Judaism doesn't allow rabbis to take that exemption. And I got this from someone who actually went to JTS. I don't know if their policy has changed, but you know that it's there. I know that very few rabbis actually take them up on it. And I'm sure, like, given enough time, I could come up with some reason how Social Security goes against my religion. I'm not going to do that. However, you definitely can see offhand, not only how this could be used for abuse, but why would you have rabbis pay taxes? Take source number 14. This is Mishpatei Uziel, same Rabbi Ben Sion Uziel that we saw about supporting Israel earlier. This is volume 2, Yeridea, number 39.
And according to my reasoning, it is clear that regarding Rabba forcing Rabbi Natan to give charity, there is no doubt of a biblical prohibition which should only apply to kings and officers in national taxes. And it is on this that he is strict. But for communal charity or for individuals, since we find no hint or support to interpret as such, and we find the incident which explicitly obligates someone to give what was estimated, we cannot reasonably exempt people from charity. Since it says, do not be hard-hearted
to tight fist, right? So Rav Ben Sion Uziel said, look, living in Israel, we're pretty much every other, guy's going to be a rabbi someplace, and say, we don't have to pay taxes. He's like, no, of course you have to pay taxes, because there is a charitable, the taxes that they were talking about in the Talmud, as you mentioned earlier about, where's your money going towards? In the Gemara on Bava Batra, 8b, is talking about infrastructure, which, let's face it, our tax money does go to, but there's also a charitable component to our tax money, which I don't think anyone can deny. The Sridei Eish, Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg, lived 1885-1966, in his Responso 1, Volume 1, 138, says the exemption of paying taxes is only for those taxes established by non-Jewish government for the sake of the kingdom, but not taxes which are collected by the heads of communities to strengthen the communities for their various needs, for this is in the category of charity, and this commandment of charity applies to everyone, including the sages. And in truth, I will say that I am not worthy to rule in this matter, for it is already disputed by Sephardic authorities. And agreeing, and continuing later on the responsa, and the agreeing rabbi cites the Rush and Aruch HaShulchan, relying on them to say that a Talmid Chacham, a sage, is exempt from communal taxes. And in truth, I have not found, another typo I need to correct, not found in their words, any proof of the opinion that sages are exempt from communal taxes, because all the earlier and later authorities only speak about taxes which are collected because of the government or to build walls, but not regarding taxes which are to support the community, for they are all under the category of charity that everyone is obligated to pay these taxes without exception. So this puts us in a little bit of catch-22 bind here. If you say that, also first off notice that he's using the same type of idiom that Rav Moshe Feinstein used, which is, I haven't found any source that exempts rabbis from paying taxes today, right? So just as Rabbi Moshe Feinstein said, I haven't found any source that says, well, paying taxes exempts you from your obligation for charity, the Sri Deish says, well, I haven't found any source that says rabbis are exempted from taxes. So this puts you in a little bit of a catch-22 here, because if you want to say that taxes have a charitable component, well then, you should be able to fulfill your obligation through paying taxes, right? Because we set the bar pretty low. But if you want to say that taxes are indistinguishable from charity, well then rabbis should have an exemption. And people don't want to say either one of those things. So when I introduce it by saying, I'm not going to give you a straight answer, here's where you get, there's a reason to say either side, but the consequences are going to be something that you might not be so thrilled with. And it's going to be weird to say, well, a rabbi, it's going to have a charitable component for rabbis, but not for anyone else, because you're still paying, the money. No one's making that distinction for you. So you're going to get backed into one corner or another, which makes it very difficult to have a very straight answer of what is the relationship between taxes and tzedakah.
Much is talking about taxes here in the
U.S. Yeah. You look at Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg. He was still living in a modern government. Not necessarily under a king. They knew what democracy was.
European Orthodox rabbi.
Yeah.
born in Poland. For 7 years, he served as the rabbi of the city of Pilwiszki, and at the outbreak of World War I, he went to Germany, Berlin. He spent the last 20 years of his life in Switzerland, so I think he...
All right, so at the very least, he, you know, went around a bit, and he saw different forms of government, right? Certainly would have been aware of what democracy is, right? Of, you know, not just having the king that's... you know, or some executive who has all power, but rather, you know, electing some form of representatives. Whether or not he lived under such rule himself, he still knew it existed. He was certainly literate enough in, you know, American politics to know, oh yeah, this is how you guys do certain things. Alright, so he was certainly aware of that.
Well, he's the one saying that it is charity.
He's the one saying that there's a charitable component such that rabbis are obligated to still pay taxes.
I mean, it's not necessarily that Ramosha is arguing. I mean, it could just be... I mean, there's democracy and then there's the social welfare state. So it could be like the Great Society. I don't know whether Bush wrote this, but...
You know what? I didn't put down the year here. I'd have to double-check. They're usually dated in the response, so I'd have to double-check exactly when. But don't forget, Rav Moshe Feinstein lived in the Lower East Side, which is really like the hotbed of Jewish socialism. You know, and a lot of that still endures today. So he was also... Let's put it this way. He was not unaware of government money going for social welfare programs. I mean, the co-ops down there is, you know, whole history of lawyers. Anyway, yeah, he was certainly aware that that's where some of the money was going. Or at least I cannot imagine that he would be oblivious. Rav Moshe was a pretty smart individual and, you know, would not have just said, it's not going for charity stuff. But you do at least, minimally, you can at least see a tension between these two conflicting laws. Sort of as an appendix here in part number 5, wanted to at least deal with the case of, if you, since, you know, certainly in America, you know, Jews are a minority, the odds of your, you know, if you want to break down your percentages of your tax money, like how much of it is going to something charitable and then break it down further, very much smaller percentage would actually go into Jews. And it leads to an interesting question of, does giving money to non-Jews count as charity? And we're going to explain what that means. Take source number 16 here. This is a Tosefta in Peah 3.1.
We do not give money directly to non-Jews, but we do give them from the sacralized money.
Right. So there's certain money that we have of Ma'aser Ani, where we're obligated to give certain years in the Shemitah cycle, money specifically for poor people, that we're not allowed to give to non-Jews, but you still give them money. David, take Gemara Gittin 61a.
Was that pause?
No, I unpaused a while ago. Yeah, we've been going for a while.
Okay. The rabbis taught, we support the non-Jewish poor with the Jewish poor. Visit their sick with the Jewish sick. Bury their dead with the Jewish dead. Out of the way of sins.
Right. So for a matter of... So for a matter of tikkun olam, or at least... the language here is darkei shalom, right? The ways of peace. Make sure the idioms... tikkun olam is the last year here. Right? So it's not that, you know, we don't give money to non-Jews. The question is, do we have, or by giving money, one is, do we have an, and the way it's written here is that we actually do have an obligation to support the non-Jewish poor with the Jewish poor. The question is, if there's money that we have a religious obligation to designate for charity, can we give that to non-Jews? Take number 18. This is Yabia Omer. This is from the responsa of Rav Avadia Yosef, volume 7, Orach Haim 22.
According to the Eri who writes, one from the nations of the world, one from the nations of the world who comes to put money in the charity box, we do not accept from him. But if he is an honored person, such that by refusing to accept his money, there will be the possibility of hatred, then we do accept from him. And from that money we give to the non-Jewish poor, since the money was given without qualification. And there is no misleading in doing so, since the money has a designation of charity, and even from our own charity, we are obligated to support the non-Jews.
Right, so Ravad Yosef in this response is quoting from the Meiri. So this is one opinion, as I think the only one I was actually able to find, who says that you act that our obligation to give charity, to give tzedakah, can actually be fulfilled by giving to non-Jews. That's his opinion. I don't know many others who hold of this. In fact,
does it have to be that, or can he just be saying you have a separate obligation to give non-Jews?
He says, "Shein tzedakah aleha." in the Hebrew, I underline the Hebrew, Shiri Ach Mishalanu Anechayvim Lefarnasam. The way that Meiri understands the Gemara of Mefarnasim Aniyei Akum, of supporting the poor of the non-Jewish people, is it is not just a distinct commandment of Darkei Shalom, or it's not something that we do for pragmatic purposes because we have to live with non-Jews, but rather that itself has a Shein Tzedakah, has a name and a designation of charitable money attached to it.
But he says also Darkei Shalom.
Yeah, because that's how the Gemara, you know, because that's the language of the Gemara. The way he explains that Gemara is to incorporate it under the rubric of Tzedakah. They're not mutually exclusive, it's just a different way of reading it. Alright? And take source number 19. This is a response from everybody, Azriel Hildesheimer in Germany. This is from his response, 1 Yeridea 223. He lived from 1820-1899. Go ahead.
Regarding vows, there is no such intention which proves this more than the one who gives charity only to the non-Jewish poor, that without a doubt do not combine into the commandment, but rather only to sanctify God's name, and also for the principle of supporting the non-Jewish poor with the Jewish poor.
So in contrast, here's another source that states explicitly that money given to non-Jews is, while, you know, mandated Talmudically, is distinct from obligation to give charity. And I included both sides because I wanted to at least get two people who would address this topic directly. One seems to view it one way, one seems to view it another way. Still, if you're going to have a requirement of a chatzi shekel as the bare minimum, odds are, even, you know, however much you, you know, break down your own tax, your own, I don't know, either way, I guess it would make sense that, you know, for most incomes, you know, you would have that much given to at least some Jewish cause in America, excuse me, and in Israel, greater probability for that as well. I thought it was interesting enough to include it here kind of as an appendix. But again, to, you know, summarize in brief, the relationship with taxes and tzedakah seems to be a little bit complicated. One way you could view it is that they're supposed to be distinct, that once you have an external obligation to give money, it no longer can count for charity. There are a few sources that I didn't include in this version for time purposes. To summarize very briefly, one person said, if you, let's say your daughter marries a kollel bachur, guy who does nothing but sits and learns all day, and you support him, can you pay, you know, give money allocated to charity to support this guy? Or if you adopt a child, can you, you know, supporting a kid, does that, could you use tzedakah money for that? And the answer given was no. If you made, you assumed the obligation for it, then it's no longer something charitable, but rather an obligation you've assumed upon yourself. One way of viewing taxes is it's an external, by external I mean religiously, personally external obligation that you have to give this money. So therefore you can't, you know, or at least you can't just rely on the government or any social welfare programs that your money goes to. Doesn't count for taxes, you're not off the hook. But another way of looking at it is no. Since there is a charitable component to taxes, you could view, certainly in a democratic government more than a monarchy, you elect members as your representatives to reallocate your money. You know that they're paying taxes. You know you want it to, you know that it's going to go to social, to certain social functions. You might want it to go to fewer social functions, but, you know, I would think even the most hardcore conservative wouldn't, you know, eliminate every single, I shouldn't say that. Whether or not you like it or not, this is what they are doing with your money, and you realize that there is a component that people take taxes, right? The government take taxes to distribute it as they see fit. One component will be for social welfare, and you can view it as not just an external government, but rather you are directly involved in a process of setting up a gabbai tzedakah. You are setting up this external body that does have a right to institute taxes. If you say that taxes are related to charity, the effect is you can fulfill your very minimal obligation of giving charity just by paying taxes. If you say that, you know, taxes have no charitable component, then you run into other issues, in particular of, well, rabbis paying taxes, which they really shouldn't do, if you really want to divest all social welfare programs from your and all charitable type programs from your taxes. So, yeah, I warned you at the beginning I wasn't going to give you a straight answer. And more than just whether or not your taxes count for tzedakah, there's some really fascinating implications, which you may now, you know, as you go into the voting booth or the polls next November, can start thinking a little bit more about your policies and exactly what am I doing when I'm putting this guy in the office. Any other last minute questions? was able to get that done relatively quickly. Last time I gave this class here, it can go for an hour and a half or whatnot, like going through having the discussions, but no press for time. All right, very cool. So thank you all very much again. Next week, I believe, is universal healthcare, which is great, great topic. All right, so see you all next week, and have a good one. Yeah, I've never done this before. Like, you know, we're having a good discussion afterwards, so I'm going to have to append it after I do my, you know, editing. Raising a really great point that really should be included here, of another ramifications I didn't include. If you want to treat your charitable, your taxes as having a charitable component, there would be another issue of would you be allowed to derive benefit from it? Because as we saw last week, if you are getting money or you're accepting money from charity for your own personal benefit you don't need, really bad. Forgetting the idiom offhand, I'll, you know, try see if I can include that again. But like, let's say Social Security, right? If you want to view that Social Security is a certain charitable endeavor, then why, if you aren't of need, would you still be allowed to collect it? Or if it would be these communal needs, would you be allowed to benefit? And that is another great point that's worthwhile mentioning, even just to tack on as an addendum here. Because if you're talking about, we were just earlier having the discussion on the Mishpate Uziel about supporting the State of Israel. If supporting the State of Israel, qua the State of Israel, is itself a charity-worthy endeavor, then if you live in the State of Israel, how would you be able to derive benefit from, you know, your own contributions? Seems to be a little bit on the weird side there. In which case, you would be better off if you'd be in America supporting Israel, because you wouldn't be deriving the same financial benefit as an actual resident of Israel. Wonderful, wonderful point there. Yeah.
Also, if you're deriving benefit, you're only deriving benefit from a fraction of your contribution. You know, if you're, you know, it's not necessarily corresponding to, like, if you give the money, as long as you don't have the intention that you're giving it as charity, in which case it would, that would probably fall you under the prohibition against collecting charity when you deserve it. But,
yeah.
I mean, can you kind of just say after the fact, I didn't derive any benefit from this year.
I don't know.
Charity for me.
I
didn't go to the doctor, so.
It's a phenomenal, phenomenal question about how to actually deal with it from that perspective. Which, even for the sides that we said how, oh, a gabbai tzedakah, you know, taking it from that component, I did not see them addressing, well, you know, if you're going to pay for Medicare, would you be allowed to derive benefit from it at all? And that is a really, really tough call. I mean, I don't know if anyone who would say insurance is considered charity, because that's effectively what insurance is. It's more of a pooled risk thing, right? So technically speaking, I mean, if you were fortunate enough to have health insurance, you're paying in for other people's medical costs, right? You know, and pooling the risk. But, you know, you don't say you're not allowed to accept. You know, it's weird to say that, well, since I didn't go to the doctor, so the money that I paid for health insurance goes to everyone else, so yay, you know, that's my charity for the year. Yeah, it does complicate matters. I didn't say this was easy. It's just I said it was fascinating. I didn't say we were going to give you a straight answer. Yeah, so there's a whole lot more to consider. And thank you for bringing up that topic again, because I forgot to include it here and worthwhile with that 3-minute, you know, I guess Appendix B even. Cool. All right. So once again, have a great week. Well.